thinking big thoughts so you don't have to.
Every day.
Here's John Williams.
Actually, some days I think too and then take a day off. It's 109. This is John. We're in the Allstate Showcase Studio on Michigan Avenue.
Oh, have mercy.
I'm here until 3 o'clock. I'm on Saturdays as well from 10 to noon. Like me on Facebook. I'm on Twitter and Instagram. Each time it's WGN King John. I want to be king someday. So a lot of things to do on the show today. We'll visit with an art critic about the Obama portrait. I dismissed it when I first saw it yesterday, or dismissed isn't the right word, but I said, I don't think the Michelle Obama painting is awesome. And we all laughed at the image of Barack Obama coming out of the vines at Wrigley Field. And then I looked at it more and sort of learned a little bit more about the artists. In fact, I interviewed just before the show the art critic at New York Magazine, who is from Chicago and has such profound, insightful things to say about that portrait. We're going to play that interview back at 1:35 in about a half hour from now. And Andy Field from ABC News talks to us about the latest with the Rob Porter case. What did they know and when did they know it? That's all coming up. Two things. I asked Bill Left to come down into our studio after he's finished his show and his hour of the stream with Wendy. Hey, Bill, how are you?
Hi. Good, John.
I really enjoyed your conversation about things you do and don't give up for Lent.
Oh, thank you.
You guys had the top 10, which are circulating on Twitter right now. And the top 10 are social networking, alcohol, Twitter, chocolate, meat, sweets, swearing, coffee, soda, Snapchat.
Yeah.
Is that the same list you had? That doesn't sound like your list.
No, it looks different. Some of the same...
ChristianityToday.com has that. By the way, number 15 on this list of things people are giving up for Lent is Lent. And then, but you know, it's interesting, if you go like 2016, 2013, you can find lists of the things people gave up.
Mm-hmm.
And it's similar, but it changes, you know? You can just see how society is kind of coming and going.
Oh, yeah, right.
So in 2016, number one, chocolate. Number two, social networking. Number three, alcohol. Twitter, Facebook does not appear in this other top 10 list, but it is here. You could put social networking, Twitter, and Facebook all in the same
category.
They're
almost the same. Yeah.
How is that different? Then school, meat, sweets, coffee, and fizzy drinks.
But look what's happened of late, where it's almost all electronic based.
Yeah.
And that's hard for people. Remember the survey that came out about a year ago where people would rather give up sex than they'd rather than social media? What?
Yeah.
When did that happen?
Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know what it'll be the year after this or the year after that, but I guess we'll see society sort of evolve. But it's interesting to go back and see what people thought was, oh boy, that'll be something to give up. Number 12 on this list is sex.
But you don't have to give it up on Sunday. That's what
you get a free pass on Sunday.
I got to tell you, that was huge on Pete McMurray's show. I was listening to that. The bishop said, and
bishop,
I don't know if
Supich,
the other bishops know this, but our bishop, and that's the only one you need, he said Sundays is a pass day.
But remember, John, bishops are a little confused because they can only move diagonally.
Good point.
So that screws them up a little bit.
Thanks for that, Bill.
Yeah.
Well, yesterday we were doing the show, something much more important than this. We were talking about taxes or something, and Bill comes bursting into the studio and says, when is the ping pong tournament?
Mm-hmm.
And I said, it's a table tennis tournament, and it's in flux right now. We've had to postpone it until we can get everybody there.
Yeah, right.
I said, I could do a weekend or a weeknight.
Yeah.
I said, if we do it on a weeknight, it would be like at 5 o'clock, 6, 7 o'clock, maybe at night, so we'll have to put the lights out back. And then you said...
I was shocked to learn it was going to be held outside.
It's an outdoor table tennis. It's a winter classic.
Oh, all right.
When I described it as the winter classic, I thought that said all that I needed to say.
Hey, I saw the arena last night, Bill.
What's it look like?
It's pretty impressive.
Is it impressive? Yeah.
Is that my place?
It was built for you, though, because the stands are limited.
Oh, but yeah, like a big crowd.
We can't get more than 500 there.
That's not enough. I was hoping for 3,000 or 4,000 at worst, but if it's only 500, I'll play.
Well, the seats will be more expensive as
a result. You're going to get that. I think it's interesting, though, that you insist that it be called table tennis and never ping pong.
Yeah.
You're a purist in that respect.
Super totally. And I'm also calling it the Winter Classic because I think if you have a really expensive indoor table, as I do.
Yes.
By God, we need to use that thing in February.
Yeah. That and you're inviting lawsuits from the NHL.
Oh, there's that. So we've got this big old deck, and it's covered with snow right now. But I think That would even make it a little more awesome.
Make it more interesting.
We'll shovel it off as best we can, but it is what it is.
Do they have Zamboni machines for table tennis tables?
They do not. And that'll be an issue, too. The surface ice. Will play differently.
Yes.
But it's folded up right now with a cover over it, so it's in good condition.
All right.
By the way, I was at Wrigley Field yesterday or the day before, and you know how they have that park at Wrigley? They have a little ice rink there?
Yeah.
The park at Wrigley is the size of this studio, the ice rink there. It's really small, but it's enough to skate around.
Yeah.
It has a Zamboni.
Oh, it does.
They
I didn't realize that.
Yeah, because it was over there the other day, and they said, everybody off! And I thought, what, the lifeguards are going to have a snack? What? Why are we having a 10-minute break on an ice rink? And then, here comes a Zamboni. All they got to do is roll it onto the thing, turn it on, turn it off, walk it back.
10 seconds later.
We're good to go.
You're safe.
But they Zambonied it down, which was nice.
Who is going to play in this Winter Classic? I know it's you and it's me. It's right. Matt Bubala,
which is really, we were set to go for a January, early February date, and Matt couldn't go. His kids had an athletic thing. So.
He sounds afraid to me.
That's
doesn't he? Sounds like he's afraid.
Well, he knows that I got game, and you beat me every time.
Oh, you guys definitely have game.
Oh,
my!
Thank you.
And Matt is a fearful
We're talking
person.
About table tennis, you know?
Yeah, I know.
Matt is fearful by nature.
Yes.
My son beats me regularly.
Oh, does he? Yeah.
The other one I can beat, the other one I can't. So I just think we have a nice mix here.
Yeah.
I think it'll be competitive.
How long have you guys been playing professionally?
Since birth, for me, I played in the womb.
Yeah, I did not.
We had a small table set up in the
womb.
But,
you know, we had one in the basement as a kid growing up.
Wasn't that fun?
And it was. And, you know, you couldn't... The space in which it was located was almost the width of the table.
Yeah, right.
It was maybe 6 inches, so you're always clanging your hand against the side of the basement wall.
Well, this won't be a problem outside.
No, we've got a lot
nothing but space.
We do have a lot of space. It'll be snow and ice packed.
You were so nice. Years and years ago, Chicago did a thing where they had ping pong tables out on the streets, and they asked you to put together a tournament, a Chicago celebrities tournament. And at the last second, you asked me, there were a bunch of guys from the Blackhawks and the Bears and media people, and you said to me, if you want to play in this, it's at 3 o'clock, come on out. And then I beat you in the finals, and then you didn't talk to me for about a year. It was 10 months.
It bothered me that I really felt with each point, and it's the same way when I played tennis with Mark Harmon.
Yeah.
Even as we're playing the points, I think I'm better than this guy.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm better than this guy. I'm better than this guy. I just hit it in the net.
Right.
And that would happen over and over again. And up until the last point, I thought, I think I'll win this.
Yeah.
I wasn't even close.
But it was the belief that you were in it. That's all that matters.
I have a saying that my wife kind of kids me about, but I don't even think it's funny. I think it's true. I am much better than I play.
No, and you think you're a lot better than you play.
Well, maybe that's it. It could be a combination.
You can't possibly be better than you play, because that's what you are.
Right.
The results are the results.
Yeah.
I have a conundrum here, because as I play, I know, like some of
It's like saying an artist is better than he paints.
I could explain it, but I'm not going to. It would take days for me to beat the sense
Let
of what
your paddle do the talking, right?
By the way, speaking of talking, you and I were just talking a little politics off the air about the Jeannie Ives ad that is out there right now. You heard that we had that one transgender guy.
I thought it was great.
In our studio.
Last week.
What a
great job you did with the whole situation. It's a touchy subject, as you know. And she found herself, all of a sudden, the target of ridicule in this ad, a very uncomfortable moment.
I think it was. And so she, that person born a male and transitioned to a female, operating as an attorney in Oak Park now, came into our studio and talked about that. You know, how difficult it must be for somebody who is, I'm not sure what her age is, but as I recall, she was going to Lyons Township High School in LaGrange or Western Springs in the 1960s. So she's older. And how difficult it must have been to be that person with those feelings in that area at that time.
Impossible.
There's no room for you.
Right.
There's no LGBTQ club like there is at a lot of high schools now. There was no place for that. So that ad talks about him.
Can I tell you the extra bonus on that whole story, and I don't even know if you're aware of this, you may or you may not be, is you had her on, you're telling the story, you're talking about Jeannie Ives' ad and how ineffective or dangerous the ad is, or effective. Maybe people are buying into it. you guys go to a break, and the first ad out of the box is the Jeannie Ives ad. Do you know that?
We charged her double.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, we just called her, and I said, for all of that, she should pay twice.
Good move.
Or she should pay not at all. It's funny, because she came on, and she's like, no, it's funny. You get it? You get it? Hey, it's comedy. And I'm like, you may be laughing. It's been lost on me. We were just jaw-dropped, like, holy, are you kidding me? And boy, she's spending money running that thing.
But here's what happened, and I've told you this off air. Jeannie Ives went from very, very few people being cognizant of who she is and what she's doing, and then all of a sudden everybody knew who she was and what she's doing in a very short span of time. So I guess you have to say it worked.
Another ad that people are talking about is the one that Pritzker's running against Rauner, right?
Yeah.
And it's the one where they have the Blagojevich tapes.
Yeah.
You know, there's the FBI recording Rod Blagojevich. It's sort of the way some people got ensnared in the Russian thing with the federal government.
Sure.
We weren't listening for these Americans. We were listening for the Russians. We happened to pick up other people.
Yeah.
Similarly, the FBI is listening in on Rod Blagojevich, and who pops up but J.B. Pritzker, doing nothing wrong, saying, hey, I want to be treasurer. Here's my ideas. And then Blagojevich just goes all Blagojevich, and you're like, well, now what do I do with this? Yeah, boss, good idea there.
Yeah.
And you kind of find yourself saying things maybe like a Billy Bush that you would not otherwise, but you're in this thing, damn, we're being recorded, oh crap, that looks bad, but it really wasn't me that was driving that bus.
Right.
Well, as it turns out, I also called Blagojevich.
You did?
I did.
Oh, no.
Well, he was the governor. I was on the radio. A lot of people were talking to him.
Yeah.
They've used that in an ad, too.
John Williams. Bad for Illinois then, and bad for Illinois now.
Hey.
You there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Who's this?
John Williams.
Okay, now listen to me. You don't know what's going on here, so you got to be careful. Don't be talking too much.
Yeah, but...
I mean, you're contradicting me here, you know.
Well, what do you think of me getting more airtime? You know...
It's a repugnant idea, but I need to leverage that Jesse Jr. with these national people. Follow what I'm saying?
Yes, right on.
Yeah, I want these national Democrats and Obama.
Totally.
I want them to...
All right, what about this? I could do the show in Chinese and then send some secret signals to people, and then you become governor. That could be a good idea, right?
You know, who knows? It could be. I'm not going to completely rule it out.
Right. Cool. I can call you Blago, right? Hello?
He hung up on you there at the end.
It's really embarrassing.
I don't know why you would do that.
My family. It's a mess.
Bad at the time and bad now.
Bad now.
Huh?
Well, I'll keep you posted, Bill Leff, on when the Outdoor Table Tennis Winter Classic happens.
I can't wait. I know Las Vegas Hotel is already taking action. Some of your bigger hotels are taking action on this. So
Sam Panionovich is out there now.
I know. He's
former
covering
sports
it.
Guy. So we should ask him if he would do a line for the game. Sam, just I know this is crazy, but...
Just crazy enough to work.
So tomorrow you'll be on 10 a.m.?
10 to noon, and then an hour on the stream.
Yeah, at WGNradio.com. Thank you, Bill Leff.
Thanks, John.
Nice to see you, sir.
And you.
How's Chicago-shaped gospel music? Why am I reading this? I don't need to be reading this just yet. I need to be reading this first. It goes like this. Oh, yeah, a courtroom shocker. Prosecutors are expected to drop charges against a Schaumburg police officer. That and more in 8 minutes here on GN. That wasn't the only ad that they're running against me.
This is the unedited Rod Blagojevich FBI wiretap.
Rod, it's John Williams from GN Radio again. How are you? How's the hair?
What follows is the full, unedited, original FBI wiretap recordings obtained by the Chicago Tribune.
Do you watch Dancing with the Stars?
Viewer discretion is advised.
Are you a lawyer?
No. But I got an A on my constitution test in eighth grade.
Huh?
But wait a minute, I want to be clear about this. It took me 2 tries, so...
Huh?
Goes on like that for a while. I mean, it's like 15 minutes. I don't have time for all that here. By the way, did you guys have to take a constitution test? Because when I was in eighth grade at Manuka Junior High School, we did have to take, to pass, to graduate from eighth grade, a constitution test. And I did flunk it the first time. I flunked it. Mr. Hill looked at me and said, really? But, you know, it just I thought, I got this. It's like the way you go in for a driver's license test now. I got it.
We had to memorize the Gettysburg Address, too. Did you have to do that?
I don't remember having to memorize the Gettysburg Address. Can you still do it?
memorize it. It would take some time, but yeah.
Our forefathers set forth on this nation.
A new nation conceived in liberty and dedicated to the proposition all men were created equal.
Nice.
Now we are engaged in a great civil war.
All right, Steve, we got it.
That's really all I have.
Just as well. Oh, well, good for you. Good for you. I was in Tavern on Rush the other day, and this is just a quick one, but...
Someone was studying for the Constitution test?
Maybe that's why you can't pass the test.
There is a guy in there who gives you mints and helps you with the towel and stuff.
In the bathroom.
Yeah. Do they still have that in women's rooms? I haven't seen that
they
in the longest time.
I
wish they would not do
me
that.
Me too.
I feel so bad for that person that I can get the towel and wash my hands myself. It's not really that great a service. It's just kind of a pathetic setup. Plus, these days, a lot of us don't carry cash like we used to. So I'm standing there doing my business, and I'm going, I know it's going to happen. I'm going to wash my hands. I know I don't have cash on me, and I know I'm going to look like a guy who's not willing to tip. When I would give him, if I had a 10 in my pocket, I would have given him the 10. I probably would have given him a 20.
But what are you tipping for? You are going to turn on the water yourself anyway. You are going to get the napkin yourself. It's, in my opinion, you tip if you take something. So if you wanted a piece of gum or maybe some hairspray.
They do that too. Yeah, they
then
have
I
that.
Understand because you're paying for something. I took something from you.
Right. I guess. I didn't even think about it that way. And I could not have. I didn't have any money. I don't know if he was offering something like a mint. But when I said, hey, listen, I'll get you next time, what do you say to this guy? I promise I'll go pee again in 10 minutes. Should I go to my table and get some money for my wife?
Say I can wash my own hands.
But he looked so disappointed. He gave me that roll of his eyes like, you schlump. Yeah, right. You'll get me next time. Yeah, sure. Like, well, I didn't even know you were going to be there.
I wish you weren't here.
I know, that's the thing. And I feel bad for him because I think this is a miserable job. I don't know what it pays, but what a lousy piece of work. And I feel bad for you. I feel so bad for you. I would give you money if I had it, not because you're doing a service that's valuable to me, but because this is so miserable.
Can I be honest and embarrass myself?
You were once that person?
More than once.
You were working in a restroom in a...
No,
restaurant?
Not that person. You.
Oh, you were like me. Well, yeah.
Plenty of times.
I don't even pretend to get them back. I'm more on Steve's bandwagon here, and I can wash my own hands.
Yeah.
I mean, when you're there and they hand you a towel, it's like, come on, just...
And when they're slow on handing you a towel, you're like, okay.
Why does the
one job you did have?
Why does the restaurant do that? Why they must know that we don't like that and that it's not a great service.
It keeps people from stealing the toilet paper.
I know there's nothing I'm going to take it. I promise. It's a nice restaurant. But they got nothing in the men's room that I want. So there's no reason for that. They're just hoisting this guy on people. I'm not mad at him per se. I'm mad at him being there. And I feel bad for him. It's 1:30. The news in just a minute. Afterwards, Jerry Saltz is the art critic for New York Magazine. And his piece about the Obama portrait is really fascinating and thoughtful and smarter than me when it comes to talking about art. That's coming up next. Here's Jerry Saltz. He is a former Chicagoan. He's in New York now. He is the art critic for New York Magazine. Just before the show, I asked him what he thought of the Obama portraits.
The portrait of President Obama is the president seated in a very plain wooden chair, and he's surrounded, almost enveloped, almost engulfed by a really rich bower of flowers. It's not a typical portrait at all. Usually you have presidents standing sort of proudly or gazing at their books in a library or holding an important device that is associated with them. This is just Obama looking at us, seated, almost at our level. The flowers around him are kind of interesting. They're African blue lilies, jasmine, chrysanthemums, and these sort of map Obama's journey from Kenyan roots to Hawaii to the official flower of Chicago, the chrysanthemum.
How does he look? What does his face say? I mean, I presume the expression is kind of critical. What do you see there?
He's troubled, human, a sort of rock of Gibraltar. You can feel that strange, mysterious human presence around him, a certain melancholy or a brooding or something reconciling, not just knowing. He's kindled with a kind of fiery curiosity, something that's very inner. But really, you have a picture of an ordinary man in an extraordinary situation. And this actually is the kind of metaphysical metaphor of what Obama was. Just a person, a bottoms-up, lucky, gifted man who found himself in the on center stage.
Now that you mention it, the face does look a little, there's consternation there, if nothing else. I mean, hopefully he's coming to some resolution to something, but you don't know by that expression. And when I look at portraits of past presidents, I'm looking right now at Reagan, Nixon, Bush, they're smiling, or at least they seem pretty content. Obama's visage is not that, is it?
No, it isn't the happy daddy. It isn't the
it is
daddy
not.
Fixation that we project onto these men. This is a man that came into presidency with two wars to deal with and a totally collapsed economy, and not to mention being the first black person ever elected president. And needless to say, he was subjected to, shall we say, scrutiny. But in any event, all of that is somehow captured in this very simple portrait of Obama.
Talk about Michelle Obama. What do you see there? Describe it and then tell us what you see.
The portrait of Michelle Obama couldn't be more different. It's plain. It's austere. It's on a powder blue background, a kind of light peacock blue. And Michelle Obama is rendered in gray tones, almost as if she had been drawn with a pencil. She's in a beautiful black and white Michelle Smith gown, kind of geometric, with just little pastel and passages of color. Mm-hmm. Some people have already attacked that, well, you're painting Michelle Obama gray. I actually think that's sort of brilliant. It negates the idiotic idea that this is a black person or a white person and says this person is both. That's what gray is, a combination of black and white. She also sits looking at you, but she's elegant, gorgeous, has what President Obama called the hotness genes. Her great, strong guns are just bare for you to see. But you also pick up the kind of jackrabbit quick wit that she has and a certain protectiveness. Both pictures emit a kind of I will not be smoked. Is it?
Yeah, there's a little, don't mess with me because I've got some game in that face. And yet,
yes.
I think that the criticism that I've heard, and frankly, it was my first reaction, is I don't know that this woman is as beautiful as she is. When I think of Michelle Obama, I also think of someone who is strong. And while there's no messing with this lady, I don't know. Do you feel it conveys her physical and her inner strength?
Two things. I recognized her instantly. And if you put this painting anywhere, I'd go, hey, you're painting Michelle Obama. And I also think it makes her an everyday queen. An everyday queen, meaning she's one of us. That's what she said at the unveiling. That these paintings would have a real effect on girls and girls of color who would look at these paintings and see people that look like them rather than only white faces, which is what Western art history has been for 1,000 years. Yeah. There's a huge missing part. And now suddenly you have these two portraits.
You know, my observation about this, too, as you speak and as I look at them, is that while they are both colorful pictures, hers is in a light blue background and, like you said, almost grayed. Obama's, the president's face, is much more colorful. It looks more like a portrait or a photograph, and it's
yes.
against a bright green. They go together, though. I mean, to me, there's no mistaking the fact that these two people are kindred spirits. Their expressions are somewhat similar. They're both handsome people, that's for sure, even though you might say the portraits themselves are different.
I think that's really good observation. Both of them also are alone. There's really nothing around them. Obama's placed in nature. Michelle Obama is taken and put in a sort of limbo, no place. And that is, again, a metaphor for where they were. They were part of everything and yet always separated out. They're very good portraits, also insofar as you want a portrait that looks like every other presidential portrait, go ahead, do one. I mean, all of you have looked at portraits like that. You look right past 90% of them because you're not quite sure which white man is being depicted until you get to the last few, and then you're going to come to this painting. The right wing is already attacking it, but they were going to attack it no matter what the painting was.
What is the attack from the right wing on this?
Well, it's been every different direction. Michelle doesn't look like Michelle. Obama is not proud enough. Of course, they would have said he's too prideful had he been painted as a standing sort of, authoritarian figure. And needless to say, they've kind of trolled the painter, Kehinde Wiley, who has made thousands of paintings of black men and women in the guises of ancient gods, myths, biblical stories, saints, kings, Napoleon.
Yeah, right.
And they found one painting from the Old Testament, which is Judith beheading Holofernes. It's an Old Testament story where you have Judith beheading the head of an Assyrian invader. So all Kehinde Wiley did was sort of flip that script, take the same story, and make the darker Assyrian be the woman holding the head, and the head is a white person. But of course now the right wing has gone bonkers like they always do, because that's what they do, and say that, you know, this is like a black power, the new Black Panthers are painting this painting. That's good. You know what? Art is for anyone. It's just not for everyone. Taxpayers do not pay for these paintings. You have to raise private funds for every presidential portrait. It might have been fun to have George W. Bush also paint Obama's portrait.
He's not bad, is he, as an artist?
I actually would buy any one of his paintings if I saw them in a yard sale for $50 or something.
Uh-oh.
And I already imagine that Trump's presidential portrait for sure should be a painting of a tweet. I do want to point out something about Amy Sherrill, the painter, the young woman who made Michelle's painting.
Mm-hmm.
She is recently discovered. She only emerged, she's about 43. She emerged 2 years ago in a group show in Washington, D.C. Her work, luckily, was selected out of thousands of others, and she had been working as a waitress, living in Baltimore, had a heart transplant in her 30s, and that was going to be it, and then out of nowhere, it's a lot like the Obama story. Michelle Obama is the great-great-granddaughter of slaves. Out of nowhere, the American story happens.
Thank you for your time.
Call anytime. Like I said, I grew up listening to WGN. You are my home station.
Well, welcome back, Jerry. We'll be in touch.
Congratulations on a good job. You're all doing great.
That's Jerry Saltz. He is the art critic for New York Magazine. You guys see this on what happened on Channel 7? Violetta, did you see what they did on Channel 7?
No.
Pyeongchang is a mountainous country 110 miles southwest of Seoul. It's the host of the Games. P.F. Chang is an Asian-inspired chain restaurant with locations throughout the United States, including Northbrook and Lombard. Pyeongchang and P.F. Chang are not the same thing. However, on Channel 7 the other morning, they were doing the story of the Olympics, and they throw up a slide in back, and it shows Channel 7, ABC, and then P.F. Chang 2018 with the Olympic circles.
Oh. That might have just been like a autocorrect.
I know somebody was typing it up and it said, "Do you mean P.F. Chang?"
And then a Grubhub advertisement came up in the corner. Are you hungry?
That's how it could have happened. In fact, Mark Giangreco over there is going to do a satirical piece where they ask people to come up with their events or whatever. So they had made this graphic, and then somebody's, you know, working in the morning going, "I need the Chang, the P.F. Chang, the Chang Chang thing," and they pull the wrong slide and put it up there. They apologized for the gaffe, which is the kind of screw-up that makes all of us, they said in the Tribune, in the news business, touch wood and utter the phrase, "There but for the grace of God go I." Amen to that.
Thinking big thoughts so you don't have to.
Here's one.
Here's John Williams.
If I'm an airline and I work in Chicago, I'm not going to be like that guy on the Kennedy who didn't have enough icer fluid. I will have enough icing fluid. How can that happen? It's 209 on WGN, and I know how it happened, but it would still seem to me like...
I got one more for you. Violetta talked about police activity downtown. I think she said at Monroe and Clark. We're getting word that there is a shooting near the Thompson Center, perhaps even in the Thompson Center, and that it might have involved someone involved in law enforcement, an off-duty Chicago police officer. Not clear yet, John, but we can tell by police activity that there's something going on there. We'll follow it and let you know more as soon as we know more.
Jump in, interrupt me as you see fit, Steve. I'll keep you posted, or we'll keep you posted with Steve Bertrand in the WGN Radio Newsroom. And my little quip of an observation there was just that there's Southwest Airlines operating out of Midway, and Tom Skilling told you, well, we'll have about 9 days of uninterrupted snow. It'll be unlike anything we've ever seen. And that's what happened. They had so much snow, the planes needed to be de-iced consistently, and they literally ran out of that product. They used a third-party vendor to provide it. They don't keep all of it there, and they ran out. They literally ran out of de-icing fluid for the planes. So there's people sitting there going, you've got to be kidding me. I mean, I know I sometimes run out of that stuff in my windshield wipers, but how does an airport, how does a major airline run out of ice fluid? And they did. So the folks were sitting there. But this is the thing, because I've watched them de-ice my plane before. You're sitting there and they come out and spray the thing down and it doesn't even look like they're getting that much done. There's not great big gobs of ice falling off. But my default on these things is I want them to do whatever makes the plane safe. You know, like they say there's a mechanical issue and we're going to sit there and a guy comes out with a wrench. I always want them to make the planes not run on time if they think there's any chance that something would go wrong. And I'm sure you feel the same way. But what are they going to do? They're going to keep the planes on the ground. That's what they got to do. But how do you guys not see that coming? How, like, on the first of those 9 days, did somebody say, hey, call the guy in Cleveland with the thing, get some trucks and get him out here. We're going to run out if this thing happens. And it happened. There's just no excuse for that. It's 211 on WGN. Unilever is the company that makes Axe underarm deodorant and Dove soap and a lot of products that you may buy. You're certainly familiar with them, and they do a lot of commercials. And the company Unilever is now saying that they are not so sure they want to be on social media anymore. Unilever, one of the world's biggest advertisers, said yesterday that it might not want to place commercials on some of the biggest websites that we see, places like Facebook and other places that ads pop up. They had a speech by one of their executives, and in part it said this. Consumers don't care about third-party verification. They do care about fraudulent practice, fake news, and Russian influencing the election. They don't care about good value for advertisers. They do care when they see their brands being placed next to ads funding terror or exploiting children. They don't care about sophisticated data usage or ad targeting via complex algorithms, but they do care about not seeing the same ad 100 times in a day. They don't care about ad fraud. They do care about their data being misused and stolen. This isn't a pro-Republican or pro-Democrat ad. It's not political at all. At least I don't see it that way. What it is one of those companies that's putting its ads out there, and they know that we are frustrated with how the internet works, how social media works, and sometimes how these ads pop up. And then it's their message. And so they say they're getting sick and tired of it. What are they going to do about that? I reached out to Jen Kirtley. She's a professor of media ethics at the University of Minnesota's Cilla Center. She's joined us many times, and she joins us again. Hi, Jane. How are you?
I'm great, John. How are you?
Pretty good. That's my send-up of this. What jumps out at you first and foremost?
You know, I always have such a mixed reaction to things like this because it seems to me that the Googles, the YouTubes, the Facebooks of the world are not responsive to us, to ordinary people, to their primary users. I mean, they see us as cash cows, and that's what they're going to use us for. They are, however, I think, responsive to the advertisers who give them money. And therefore, I think, if there's really going to be any serious change here, it probably is going to be driven by advertisers. And as you said, Unilever is a huge, huge conglomerate, buys billions of dollars of advertising. And I think this is something that the various social media companies are going to have to pay attention to. Having said that, while I certainly deplore the fake news, the distorted news, the stuff that's put online by people that aren't who they say they be and are supposed to be and all that, I do worry a little bit. It's fine until the day that the many enterprises owned by the Koch brothers come in and say, well, we don't think you're publishing enough conservative news, so we're going to pull our ads. I mean, where does it stop? In a way, of course, this is not a new issue. Advertisers have always been able to try to throw their weight around when a media company is publishing things they don't like or not publishing things they do want to have published. I just am concerned that outfits like the Googles and Facebooks of the world aren't going to react to this the way a news organization would, because this isn't really about defending material that ought to be there. It's about their laxness in policing the stuff that, in my opinion, really shouldn't be there.
And there's a lot of things that they're, you know, sort of roasting here. I mean, ad placement is one thing. Adjacency to ugly articles is another thing. They seem to just be frustrated with the whole damn bunch of them, you know?
And it's nice for them, I mean, from their perspective, to cloak this in the guise of, oh, this is all about getting real news out there and eliminating fake news and getting rid of the things that are offensive and all that. But you're absolutely right. Don't kid yourself. Unilever has a bottom line here. They think they're being harmed by the juxtaposition of their ads with certain kinds of content. They don't want that to continue, and so they're threatening these companies so that hopefully it won't continue.
Well, I don't mind if though the response from Facebook and Google and YouTube were to, I don't know, somehow make Unilever happier. I presume that would make my experience on the internet a little better. I mean, I don't mind it going down that road, Jane.
Well, I don't mind it going down that road, and certainly market forces. We live in a capitalistic economy. That's how these things are going to play. But I guess what makes me sorry when I read these things is that it comes back to sort of the cliche that media companies, however you define them, are ultimately, they make their choices based on what their advertisers want, not what their customers want, not what the consumers of news and information want. It's just troubling to me to think that we're just, you know, a little in their world and not really that important until it starts hitting their bottom line. At least that's the way it appears to me.
Well, there are times where I'm on sites that are ugly sites, or there's articles that I feel are terrible, either not truthful or just mean-spirited, not funny, etc. And I'll see an ad next to that. And I think, does that company know that they're going to be next to this thing or on this page? And I expect the answer is no.
I'm sure it is. I'm pretty sure it is, no. And I think we've all seen the juxtapositions of, you know, things that are completely inappropriate, not because the content in and of itself is bad, but, you know, it's an article about a suicide and you suddenly get an ad about something that is very frivolous or something like that. So, you know, I doubt that it would not be possible for these companies to be able to handle this better? I think they probably could, but, you know, they love their algorithms, and they're just going to let those carry the day until somebody complains enough that they're going to change it.
There's an ad that pops up all of the time. I want to tell you about it after a quick break. But I also want you to call 312-981-7200, or you can text to that number as well. If there's something along these lines that bugs you, something that happens habitually or continually, and you see it when you go online, what is that? Is it an ad? Is it something else? I'm not exactly sure. But this is a chance for you just to kind of sound off. We'll get Jane's informed opinion about it too. Jane Kirtley's on the phone, professor of media ethics. We talk to her when things come up that have to do a lot with social platforms, Facebook. Now here's Unilever, this big giant company that makes all kinds of products that we use every day. They're like a Procter & Gamble. They're the folks behind Dove soap and Axe products, etc. And they issued a statement this week just saying how utterly frustrated they are with the way the internet handles their ads. They don't like the placement it gets. They don't like the fake news that's out there. And when you're reading something that you don't like or don't believe or, in fact, just isn't true, their ad is sitting right next to it. They hate the juxtaposition. It's funny because, Jane, as I recall now, your attitude is, yeah, sure, but, you know, I mean, you're sort of looking askance at their position on this a little bit. Just refresh.
Well, they have every right to have their position. As I said, I think advertisers have always wanted to try to control the way the media companies that they advertise in play their ads and so forth. There's nothing new in that. And I'm in favor of anything that would encourage these social media platforms to do a better job of policing genuine fake news. The problem is that it's easy to have sort of a viewpoint drift in this, where it doesn't become just a question of this is a fake, totally fabricated story, get it off, to, well, this is a story I just don't really like, so I'd like it to go away. You know, we're not talking about the government here. The companies both have all the rights in the world to make these decisions. I just raise the question of whether this is the best way to do this. That's really all I'm trying to say.
But better the free market do it than the government decide. I mean, one person's fake news may be the other person's propaganda, their influence, their advertising, right?
And that's certainly true, and that's why it's so difficult to, you know, square this circle and try to decide what's good, what's valuable, what's true. And, you know, in the past, we relied on the news media to make those decisions and went to those sites we thought were credible. The weird thing about the YouTubes, the Googles, and the Facebooks of the world is they don't quite know what they are. They don't really know if their news delivery systems, even they use words like news feeds. I don't think they act in an appropriate editorial functional kind of way, so I don't consider them journalism. They're
sources
of information.
I agree.
They're sources of information, but they're not journalists, in my view, at least not now. They could be, perhaps, if they'd invest in the personnel to do it, but relying upon algorithms is not the way to make that happen.
Well, they're conduits. I mean, Facebook does not have a news team. YouTube does not have a news team. Google does not have a news team, really. I mean, you'll get information from them.
And you know, they have had people along the way that have done things to look for pornography and things like that, or to censor stuff that is illegal content in other countries, even though it's legal here. But that's not journalism. That's a censorship team.
This texter says, John, if social media promises that you'll reach so many people by advertising on their site, but half or more of the accounts are bots, they're not getting their money's worth. That's a problem that we've been following here, the problem of bots, fake accounts, fake Twitter accounts, things like that.
Well, I worry about bots and fake accounts a lot more in the area of disinformation than I do for the poor advertisers who I think can take care of themselves. They have enough clout to do that. But I do think there's no question that the proliferation of fake news and various kinds of propaganda through bots is a huge issue.
Release the memo was a hashtag that was huge when the question was, should the president and that congressional committee release the Nunes memo? And I forget what it was, but the number I saw was a astounding how many of the release the memo hashtags were from accounts that were fake, were robots, were not real.
Exactly, and I don't think we've even begun to get a real handle on this. I mean, the hearings they've been having in Washington the last couple of days just keep showing how we're way behind the game on this. The people that started doing this and are behind this are experts, and we've been very naive, I think, in terms of this disinformation campaign.
This texter says, John, I occasionally click on the ads just to generate income for the internet company. what a nice
bless
thing.
Your heart.
but that works that way, right? I mean, that's really what you're paying for, is click-throughs, regardless of the intent of the clicker.
Well, absolutely true. And, you know, I think that the other side of this, and it's something that I think we need to keep in mind, is that, you know, things that are free on the internet really aren't free. Somehow you're paying for it, whether you're clicking through the ads or whether whoever is hosting the site is collecting your data and selling it. You know, nothing is free. There is no free lunch, and there's no free lunch on the internet.
There's a guy here in Chicago named J.B. Pritzker. He's running for president. Every time I click on a YouTube video to watch something else, and I do that a lot, sometimes it's even in front of, I think, CNN or other videos, it seems like every time I sit in this little studio I work in here to watch videos, I see a J.B. Pritzker ad over and over and over again. I don't know that that's a fair complaint on my part, because he's got the money and I don't have to go on the internet. But I wonder if, in fact, that's working for or against him. I'm getting so beat up with it. And do I have any options there, or should I, Jane?
Ad blockers. I mean, you always have the option of loading an ad blocker onto your device. And again, it's a double-edged sword, because you are in that way undermining a revenue source for the site that you're going to. But, you know, if you don't care about that, or if it's just driving you crazy, that is always an option. They're not perfect, but they're easy to get from any number of app stores.
Jane Kirtley is a professor of media ethics at the University of Minnesota's Silla Center. It's nice to talk to you, Jane. We always appreciate your effort. Please join us again.
I will. It's always a pleasure for me, too.
The FBI director is contradicting the White House's position on the Rob Porter timeline. I want to catch up on this with Andy Field from ABC News. Give me a few minutes of your time, Andy. How are you this afternoon?
Good. As usual, another slow news day here in Washington.
How about when you guys take vacations? You really need vacations over there.
Oh, we turn off everything. If we could unplug the world, it'd be great.
So the FBI says that they submitted a partial investigation and then follow-up information two more times, and that as long ago as 10 months ago, the White House at least had some information about Anthony Porter. Catch me up on this.
Actually, the initial report that they gave to the White House was almost a year ago in March. They said they had wrapped up their investigation in July and submitted it to the White House Personnel Office. That is 6 months ago, more than 6 months ago at this point. They said they got... So someone at the White House knew about this background information on Rob Porter. And Rob Porter, of course, is the presidential aide who resigned or was forced out, depending on who you talk to, because in large part because of domestic violence charges by two of his ex-wives, and pictures of one of them with a black eye and others talking about this. Now, the question is, and why the White House has been scrambling about this, is that the White House claims that it only fully knew about these things last week. Well, the FBI director today got up and, under oath, told Congress that's not true. They knew about it last July.
Okay, but that doesn't mean the president knew, and it doesn't even mean that John Kelly knew, right?
That is correct. Now, Sarah Sanders got up today and said, basically, through the entire White House personnel department under the bus, by saying they had this information, they were doing significant more background checks on him, and it's not quite clear why they need to redo the work that the FBI has already done, because that's what the FBI is supposed to do, unless they were perhaps told or requested to do that. The FBI says they got more requests for information in November and again in January, and then they got new information in February. Now, this is a guy who literally handles the president's top secret information. He's been working on a interim security clearance, and what's interesting is that Dan Coats, the director of National Intelligence, today in Congress testified under oath that people with an interim security clearance should not be handling top secret information.
Yeah, right. I don't know that I want John Kelly to go, because a lot of us think that he's the adult in the room, and while he's not been 100% effective, he's the Marine that the president looks up to, and it'd be nice if he could corral Donald Trump's worst impulses. So maybe good that John Kelly can keep his job. But if he knew about this and decided not to act on it, then he's got to go. If he didn't know about it, then I'm not sure what that says about his tenure, because maybe he should know about it. He should have things running well enough that something like this comes to his attention. How in the world did the FBI hand it off to somebody over there and it not get to John Kelly?
That is the big question that the White House is literally doing a Fred Astaire, Ginger Rogers dance around.
Yeah, no kidding.
It is. I've never seen. And what's interesting is that Sarah Sanders is not supporting Kelly, and she's not supporting him, pretty much anyone. All she's saying is, this is the best information that they're giving me, which is really extraordinary for a press secretary to be saying, because the press secretary is supposed to have the ear of the president. The president can tell her anything he wants to.
Well, I would imagine you could work this backwards. Just say, okay, the FBI, when you did that search on him and found the things you did and filed three reports, who did you give them to? There must be an electronic chain, if nothing else, on this.
Oh, I don't think there's any secret about it. They give it to the White House Personnel Office, and the White House Personnel Office is tasked with handling all these things, which is basically, you know, it's like your HR department or your accounting department. You submit your timesheet for the week, and they process it. They're a department to process these things. And in this case, it's unclear why it took from July until last week to process this information.
How did the Daily Mail get it before John Kelly did then? My goodness. Okay, so what happens? What's the next step in this story, Andy?
I don't know, but the White House news conferences have been dominated by this for the last couple of days. And it's not more than just a domestic abuse charge, although that in itself is pretty horrendous. Once again, our reporter, Cecilia Vega, had an opportunity to shout questions at the president at a photo opportunity today, asking about John Kelly, about when they knew about this, and more specifically, Mr. President, you have yet to say anything about the domestic abuse victims. You're
yeah, right.
Lavishing praise on the people accused of this, but nothing, not a word about this. What do you have to say? Stone silence.
By that, he's still holding out that a man is innocent until proven guilty, and I think we all understand that. You know, he said, though, that a man's life can be ruined by mere allegations, and to me, the operative word in that is mere. These aren't mere allegations, flimsy or whimsical one-offs.
Well, he also talked about due process, and in fact, at least one of the ex-wives actually went through due process to get a restraining order against her husband, and a judge found the information credible enough to tell the ex-husband to stay physically away from her.
Andy Field reporting from Washington, ABC News. We'll visit again, Andy. Thanks for your time.
Thank you.
Valentine's Day is tomorrow, guys. I got a perfect last-minute gift idea for your someone special. Surprise her with a gift certificate for ballroom dance lessons at Arthur Murray. I'm going to Arthur Murray right after the show. She's going to absolutely love this, and trust me, you'll have some fun too. They have a new student offer. Get a private lesson for you and your wife. You're the new students for just $40. Log on right now to ChicagoArthurMurray.com to purchase and immediately print your gift certificate. Yeah, you got this in the bag. With 9 Chicagoland locations, there's one near you. Go to ChicagoArthurMurray.com. Before we go into the newsroom, we're following not only that shooting downtown, but we're also wondering how the market's going to do today. It closed down 300 points. Hey, Aleph, where's the market now?
The Dow Jones Industrial Average is up 42.78 points. At 24,644.11, the Dow is up 0.17%.
I'll take that. A couple seconds away from 3 o'clock. Are they ready at the auto show? Is that what they are, the auto show? Are you guys?
We're over at the auto
show. Hi, Anna. How are you?
I'm okay. Your Siri works a lot better than my Siri. Mine does not do that.
Well, John has something to do with the fact that his Siri gets paid.
Works. I have special access to the hard drive on this one. So what's going on out at the auto show?
Obviously, we're here. We're going to continue to cover this story, though, the shooting downtown. One person has been taken to the hospital, and we're awaiting word on that. We're told we are going to be getting word imminently, so stay tuned for that. This appears to be a fairly significant story that is developing here in Chicago based on what we've been able to glean so far. Mm-hmm. Police aren't saying too much, but I think we can read into that this is very significant.
Okay, guys, good show for you, and we'll continue to listen to that news.